This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 142, It's Hot Enough to Char a Charizard. Welcome to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. I am your co-host, Phaedra Boinodiris, and I am joined here by Michael and by Michael, the other co-host. And it has been a long time since we've all been together. Hi, guys.
Hey, and that wasn't even an edit error. It wasn't like, and Michael.
And Michael. Michael and Michael.
Michael. Yeah, Michael, well,
there's two of all three of us together again for the very first time.
No. I've been together with myself for, you know, for a while.
For a couple of years, at least.
It is really great to have everybody back on the phone, and or actually, we're not on any phones. We are on the podcast. We're recording. It's hot. I'm glad it's inside.
It's way too hot.
And we have got some topics that are scorchers.
But by the way, you remember the, I guess it was the 2012 election where they had the rent is too darn high party?
No.
I was thinking this morning, it's like, the weather is too darn hot.
I was remembering the Bruce sketch, I think, from Monty Python.
Yes.
It's hot enough to boil a monkey's bum, she used to say. Something like that. My Australian's not really that good. Anywho, we've got a scorching set of topics here that we want to blitz our way through in lightning speed in order to hit all of the hot points across them all. The first one, Michael, is one that you showed and joined into the mix on Second Life, making a resurgence. And I remember looking at the same video, or not video, but the artwork. It was a couple of weeks ago. But there's a new twist,
Yeah, this story's been slowly percolating or virtually percolating over the last few months. So the guys over at Linden Lab have released a new platform to really take advantage of the whole virtual reality space. For those who don't remember, one of the original reasons behind this podcast and our podcast before this one was work going on around business technology using virtual worlds to improve business processes, increase collaboration, etc. And what was really interesting is the guys at Linden Lab, who are the people behind Second Life, which was the platform that had all the hype back in 2006, 2007, 2008. The aspect here is they've started a new project called Project Sansar. And Project Sansar is really leveraging what they've learned in 13 plus years doing virtual world technology and extending that into true virtual reality. So you'll have user created content, immersive environments, economies, etc. And I remember early on in the virtual world space, an island, which was basically a virtual server in Linden Labs, was like $1,500.
Right. And you can sublease it.
Yeah. And now they're talking like $300 max for your own server in this environment, which means now you're getting down into pretty much what you pay for, you know, playing any other virtual game. So it was $300 a month originally, and now right. They're talking actually less than that. It's like $10 a month now what they're looking at, or tens of dollars per month to get that experience. And to take both the VR aspect and integrate it into that desktop aspect, so you kind of have this seamless experience between virtual worlds and virtual reality. This could be cool.
The business model, I think, is the biggest change that I've seen here, right? You know, so sure, you want to scale, right? You want to have 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 potential people in an environment. So there's value for that. But it's the business model that you're just on, right? Where it used to be, like you said, $300 a month to host a space and that you could sublease or do other things with, that now they're looking instead to capture economic value of the transactions happening in the world and right. getting a tax essentially on that versus trying to say, hey, you just pay us a substantial amount of money in rent and anything you earn is what you earn and you keep it all.
Yeah. So this will actually, I believe, incent even more creation. And more consumption, right? Because I can get in for basically zero and then I just pay a little bit of the tax on the consumption aspect. And if I'm a creator, I can come in at a much less cost up front and I can actually make more of a quote unquote living or virtual living in the environment based off of the business model. So it really incent people to come in as creators as well as consumers.
And I also like the duplication possibilities, right? Way back when you could create an object, a car, some complex building, whatever, and there were possibilities to copy it and to essentially take it, you know, without paying the content creator. The way that it looks like, according to the article, things have come together here is that they use Texas A&M as an example where they built a chemistry lab. And that entire chemistry lab could be licensed, duplicated, and then people could be in copy one of it or in copy 2,000 of it that could all be running concurrently. And that seems to be a very interesting and novel way of this new environment providing more value, especially for content creators to deliver something and then have a licensing revenue stream based upon what they've created that can all happen at the same time and not just be in the one lab that was created the very first time.
Yeah, well, the original platform did have a pretty good copy protection scheme. The challenge was people would use third-party tools and dig into the cache on your local machine in order to rip things off and break the DRM.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't remembering it fully, but you're exactly right.
Yeah. Well, pretty exciting stuff. I can't wait to see it. And, you know, maybe we'll have to play with it soon.
Right. So next topic in our hit parade here is another hot and exciting one. And this is the game that's been sweeping the nations, plural. I believe it was rolled out first in Australia a couple of days ago, New Zealand. And Pokemon has now taken over the phones of millions of people around the world.
Yeah, and Phaedra, you and I talked about this a couple of weeks back on the show as something that was coming, and you were sure that your kids were going to get engaged and start playing on this. So have they?
No. I'm hoping this August, though. I'll get them hooked this August.
Okay.
We'll be on vacation. We'll try it then.
So, Michael, I know you've tried it. Or tried to try it.
Yeah, I've tried to try it. In my case, my try happened after I started seeing all the pictures on Facebook of people discovering Pokemon and dojos and gyms and all these kind of things in various places. I tend to not to like to use Facebook, Gmail, other authentication means to sign into apps, preferring instead to use an email password type combination. So for me, I've been a little frustrated because I've not been able to do that because that portion of the authentication on the site is down and has been down since I've started trying to do this maybe 2-3 days ago. But my family's been trying it, and it's very addictive as an augmented reality game that you can walk around and start to discover things unexpectedly.
Well, the thing that I thought that was awesome about this is really that key point, started to walk around. This is a great way to encourage kids to get out and do exercise and walk around and take hikes.
Oh, that's it. Then we definitely need to try it.
It's perfect for it, right? And now they do have all the appropriate warnings of, you know, look up. Don't stare at your screen.
You think it'd be good for a 5-year-old?
Depends on how much motion that 5-year-old needs to do. Most 5-year-olds I know are pretty active. So, but it's compelling. You know, you're on the verge of discovering something new on a regular basis, and just by walking around and moving your phone around, something pops into view, and you start to get a little closer to it, and then you're able to say, "Oh, you know, that's a level 6 Charizard or something. I'm going to go catch it."
And you found a thing this morning, Michael, on the Pokemon Go Plus.
Yeah, actually, this is something I saw last night as I was frustratingly trying to figure out how to create my login credentials so I could play the game. Pokemon, or Niantic, the parent company, has created a Bluetooth LE wristband. So if you are out and about walking without your phone, you know, we should probably diverge for a minute on why that would be, but okay. You could identify Pokemon in the wild with this Bluetooth LE device and then go back and try to capture them later. So it looks like a little Pokeball that you wear on your wrist. And I didn't run the video or anything to see if it lights up or whatever. But the thing that struck me about this was, is, you know, what a perfect app to put on a smartwatch, right? And have the smartwatch use its haptic feature to alert you that, hey, you know, there's a gym within 100 meters of you right now, and it's over to your left. And you could do all that with haptic feedback off of a smartwatch.
Yeah, it looks like it does light up as you get nearby. The thing, you know, look at the shape of it. It's got kind of this pointy part to it. I was wondering if that actually pointed you in the direction. Like you could spin the thing on the wrist and go, okay, it's northeast.
It is where it is. Follow. You know, beep, 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 beep. So I think that's fun too. And geocaching has been something that people have loved to do for a long time. So yep. I'm eager to try to play the game because I think that if there are opportunities to do more with this game that was built on the same engine as what's the Google?
I was just thinking the exact same thing. I said, I know this has Ingress. To have been built by the, yeah. What is it?
It's built on Ingress. So Ingress. Many yes, of the yes. dojos and other spaces and places that you'll go to see have their roots in Ingress. And a couple of my buddies who were playing this game when they were out in Las Vegas were happily showing that they have taken over the Las Vegas airport. So, you know, isn't that cool, Phaedra? You know,
that is really cool.
This is just like now being able to have that that sort of monopoly experience where you own something in virtual space that people, as they're passing through it in real space, would go, oh, wait, that's one of my friends. They own the airport here.
Terminal
How about
5.
That?
That's pretty funny.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I think it's a perfect example of taking what when it first came out, Ingress was like, what's the point?
Yep.
And now tying it into a brand, tying it into something that already has a mythos around it, that story that engages people. This is cool.
And sticky, right? I mean, it draws you in.
Sticky, because you got to collect them all.
Well, yeah, I did play Ingress for a while. And Michael, didn't you too?
I tried, and it was boring. But this looks much more fun.
Yeah.
Phaedra,
how about you?
There was no story behind it. There was a story, but there wasn't any reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you play Ingress at all? Yeah.
I played it at a conference. Just, you know, they were having a demo.
Yeah.
But it looked really cool from what I saw.
It was. Really impressive. It was. It was just a little hard to get into, I found.
Yeah.
I remember, though, wasn't Will Wright talking about, with his game engine Hive Mind, he thinking about doing like a Pokemon Go, but for citizen engagement. And that sort of fell off and died off.
Maybe so. I seem to remember that in the depths of my memory, Phaedra.
Yeah. I hadn't heard anything about that. Like if you took that same model for something like citizen engagement and, I don't know, send people on different micro quests or missions, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything since.
There was something similar we saw a few years ago where consumer product companies would send people on micro quests, like to go check the price of their product in a store shelf.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So to me, the fact that Ingress is in the background of this, coupled with something stickier on top that allows people to have a more visceral engagement and a play around it, and where there are storyline elements where theoretically, and again, I haven't played it yet because I can't get my login credentials, you could do things where you're leaving behind pieces that you now interact with other people on could be really, really compelling. And that could open the door to a whole range of different games, not just the sphere around what's going on with Pokemon.
You could see where
you could do this around Star Wars mythos. You could do this Star Trek. You know,
yeah, no pun about the sphere.
No pun about the sphere. I was going to go somewhere hot again, but I decided not to do that.
Well, the sun is a big hot sphere.
It is. It is. But you know what else is really hot these days?
Startups.
Blockchain.
Really?
That's what I've heard.
Random.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I know. Thanks, Vader. I'm trying for the segue. It didn't quite actually work, but
this is interesting. There's a huge amount of interest, heat, hype, activities, etc. about blockchain. And saw a post earlier this week. I think it was yesterday. The first presidential candidate position on blockchain.
Yep.
and what's really interesting, so I've been focusing on this some in my day job, and there is a lot of thought about what can you do with blockchain that changes the way businesses work, that improve trust in untrusted environments, that drive new business models, and that really enable growth of potential new businesses. And so I thought this was a really good post about how the economy can be positively impacted with blockchain. And it'll be interesting to see the positions of all the candidates right now on new technology and how it can help and improve various economies. I mean, whether you're talking about the impact of blockchain on Brexit,
right?
The impact on blockchain on healthcare in the U.S. or whatever, I think it'll be interesting to see.
Right, because it's not just cryptocurrency-related functions. It's the ability to...
Yeah, that's Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Well, which is only a tiny portion of this, right? And the hype is certainly there. I mean, there's some great quotes in the article from MIT's Media Lab director saying today's blockchain is not the internet in 1996. It's probably more like the internet in 1990 or the late 80s. So it's a capability, but there's not necessarily enough real strategic direction that says, all right, we're going to use this to record all of the legal cases that have been decided, or to record all of the transactions involving property and title and deed.
My favorite blockchain example recently was a startup in London that took the blockchain, wrote to it all the information of flight delays, et cetera, and offered a service to automatically claim your flight insurance that like 60, 75% of the people who have flight insurance never make claims against it, even when they're entitled to it. And so by creating this indelible record of all the information, which was publicly available, tying it to you through the blockchain and your purchase of that insurance, people would automatically be able to claim their flight insurance claims.
That is very clever. And it would notify you?
Yep.
It would say,
it'd be like, you have now qualified for flight insurance and we have flight insurance claim and we have processed
it. We filed it on your behalf.
That is a good use.
Yeah. Very disruptive, very innovative, and all about, you know, trust in an untrusted environment, around new business models, around integrity of the data, and also, you know, about, you know, this open platform. So trust, transparency, and accountability, I think, are the phrase that they're using in this article on blockchain for government. But if you think about it in just regular business transactions, it's pretty disruptive and pretty cool.
I love that. That's a fantastic concept. The ones that I've been reading about that I find intriguing but aren't so specific as that example, Michael, are the ability to have agents that can act on your behalf that will either grant or revoke access to information that you've stored in the blockchain. So you might have medical information, for example, that you will authorize to a particular provider for a particular service, and then you can revoke that access once that service is done.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to have multi-years that – that a service provider has access to your data, which makes it all that more susceptible to being hacked, as just one example among many.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very, very cool. Okay, so one more big hot topic that we had in the list for today, and this is from Microsoft, and the code name of this project is from a cool place. I believe it's Sweden, actually. It's Malmo, Project Malmo.
Project Malmo.
So,
which is different than Project Marshmallow.
So Michael, how did you stumble upon this latest incarnation of Minecraft technology?
Well, it's not a stumble. I have I use Reader, which is a RSS reader, and I get feeds every day, so I find all kinds of interesting stuff there. But the reason I captured this one really was we talked, I want to say a month or two, maybe even 3 months ago, about medical Minecraft and mm-hmm. how Microsoft was doing stuff to teach AIs in Minecraft, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the first time I've seen a meaningful public article talking about the actual project. So this is actually using AI in Minecraft to actually build stuff. So I think it was originally showcased back in March, which sounds like about the right time we initially talked to it. But this is a little bit more detailed article that just was cool. I thought it was interesting, and we should talk about it and see if there's anything new that we've learned in the last 4 months that we can add to it.
So given Microsoft's forays into AI, I find this a really intriguing space, right? Because the Minecraft environment with its redstone and all the capabilities that it has for the various computing capabilities that can be brought to bear allows for some pretty sophisticated coding and then 3D object manipulation to either create compute type answers to problems or to build capabilities that are not necessarily functional in a way, but they can be also answers to problems. I'm thinking even about things like Foldit and for other things like that as well, that this could be an interesting way of letting an AI loose in an environment where it can construct things that become a little bit easier to understand, look at, see, and work with, because it's not just code. It's output of code, and it's in a virtual but 3D environment.
And then attach it to a 3D printer and make it real.
Sure. Sure.
And then train it to kill.
I think it's also interesting how they're using GitHub as a means to really be able to grow and evolve the project using crowdsourcing versus keeping it all in-house. I think that was a smart move.
Yeah, so getting a chance to take a look at it in GitHub to actually harness what has been produced, that's going to be the neat new thing. So I'm planning on subscribing to this and seeing what people are forking off of it and what they're trying to do with it.
They mentioned dictation, identifying patterns in dictation. Do you think that was just like an example or a metaphor? You think that's actually something they're trying to tackle?
I would think they're trying to tackle that.
That'll be interesting.
I don't have any additional information.
Yeah.
So what the Microsoft technology is what, Cortana, is that right?
Yes.
So
that's what's in Windows 10.
Right. So you would imagine that is built right in, right? So from a dictation perspective. But when you imagine what might that mean in a Minecraft environment, you could build sound waves out of blocks. You know, that could be represented that way, just like you see when you're recording an audio file, you've got your sound waves up and down and so on. You could do something interesting like that. And that might be able then to identify certain patterns for speech, voice recognition, you know, individual people, et cetera, that might otherwise just, not go as easily noticed. But I think then that what that means, what that would mean is that it wouldn't be just I have an API that allows for construction in the Minecraft environment, but I'd want to have the ability also of essentially reading the Minecraft environment, taking in the information that's there, and then doing something different as a result. So the input could be, here's my world, okay, got it, and now do something, and now create an output that might be text, or it might be a picture, or it might be another world that's based upon what the first one did in the first place. Wow.
Turtles all the way down.
Turtles all the way down. So, Phaedra, you have been all over the place in the last couple of weeks. You've been spending time in various incubators. There's another hot reference for you. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen in these different places around the world, and what's been cooking up in those incubators.
Well, the first city I visited was Paris, and I got an opportunity to visit two fantastic engineering schools. One of them has a very unique business model. It's called School 42 or École 42 in French, and their business model is so tremendously unique. No tuition, no teachers, no classrooms. It's really, in essence, a project-based. It's fascinating, and they presume that, you know, if you graduate and you make something where you're rich and famous, you're going to give back to the school. So it's been so successful that the founders are actually expanding their model to Silicon Valley. So they're opening up a second school there. And I've got to say that they've got a huge focus on the subject area of games and serious games. So it was really, really fun to meet with them.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was the first group. Then I made it to the Czech Republic, and when I was there, there was an incubator that was focused on games for entertainment based in Prague, and they were having some just tremendous challenges finding a university to help host them.
Didn't try Charles University?
Well, there's some backstory to this, but in essence, what happened was that the engineering schools, when they would broach the subject with the engineering schools, because the subject, the challenge in the Czech Republic is that the schools are not teaching any game design and development degree programs, so they're having a hard time finding skilled talents. And so they wanted to tie the incubator much closer to the engineering school. But from what I understood, the engineering school's response was, well, that sounds too commercial. We're not really interested in teaching business principles to our students in engineering. So it's been interesting to see sort of the different philosophies, different approaches towards incubating a games market based on how mature, what their level of growth is. Just truly, truly different. I also think, you know, seeing the game studios and publishers in the Czech Republic, many of them, or rather most, I would say, had all of their own tooling. I mean, like, when I say all of their own tooling, I mean it. And I'm wondering if it's because it's only recently, fairly recently, that they got access to the tooling, or is it something in the philosophy? I'm not quite so sure. But
is this the guys over at ITSGAS?
No. I'm not going to name names because I don't want anybody to feel kind of awkward about it. But
they're not listening. Just the three of us here.
Yeah. So it was interesting. It was interesting to see. And then I visited Denmark too, which was amazing. And seeing again that industry grow. They have their own version of the IGDA called Growing Games, a fantastic group of people, a lot of indie developers, really, really wonderful guys. So it was a great time.
Ah, well, you can tell that it was a great opportunity for these different groups having a chance to interact with you just as much as for you to interact with them too. Wow, that's terrific.
Very cool.
Well, team, it's about that time, so we need to wrap up here, and we should do a quick little, so what are you playing? So, Michael, talk to us.
Well, other than the Pokemon Go, right? last week I picked up the Star Wars The Force Awakens Lego game on the iPad, which is a freemium game and has multiple free episodes. That's all I'm playing right now because I'm not going to give them any money. And it's okay. I like the Lego games, but they're very frustrating to me.
Really?
I always end up in some place where I can't do the double tap just right, and it's usually early on in the game, and I'm like, screw it.
Yeah, well, that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phaedra, how about you? Are you playing anything fun and new these days?
I am. Well, I met the team of IO Interactive in Copenhagen. They're the makers of Hitman. So I was introduced to the world of Hitman, and I've got to say it is really cool, especially their latest version of the game where you can not only instruct your Hitman, but also you can be a grand puppet master of multiple Hitman, and you can sort of organize missions, and it's tremendous fun.
Oh, how fun.
I'll send you the link.
Yeah, do. We want to share it here as well. I think the only thing that's quasi-new for me, but not exceptionally new because we talked about this recently, is I've been playing Sneaky Cards. And that's more of
in-person
game. Yeah, I know.
Very cool.
So I got my cards here. I'm going to go put the one into someone's locker here momentarily and see if they notice.
Very cool.
Guys, great to be together. So let me hope that each of you stays cool and that our listening audience sends us their hot topics that we can talk about when we are back together next time.
Everybody have a great time.
A pleasure. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.